Today is a topic on singleness, and it's part of the series that we're doing. Now, you may be sitting here and you're married, and you'll think, oh, well, okay, so this topic doesn't actually relate to me, so I can just sit back and relax and let the topic sort of drift over me a bit, a little bit of sleeping. Well, news for you, I'm afraid you can't, because this sermon today is going to be speaking both to marrieds and to singles. So stay awake, all of us, because we're part of a church family. And we should understand the issues, the cares, the joys of others in the family. And we should know each other's anxieties and care for each other. So just as last week, I hope some of us singles were really listening to that sermon on marriage. Then all of us, marriage and singles, let's listen to this sermon today on singleness. Now, who are the singles? Well, when we think of singles, probably we have in sort of mind, okay, perhaps the 20s, possibly early 30s. But in fact, there is a whole range of people who are, of course, single. Not only the people in their 20s who may well get married in the future, but also the people in their 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond who have never been married. Those too are the singles. There are the people who have been married but who are widowed and suddenly have to live the single life. There are the single parents. There are the singles with disabilities or the singles living with parents dependent upon them. There are the men and the women who are singles. So it's a whole big range. And obviously, one can't cover everything in a sermon. In fact, I really had enough material for about 2 hours, but don't worry, I cut it down. But also, just to think about not only the widows who suddenly have to live the single life, but singles in their 20s are possibly in a different situation from singles in their 40s, 50s, 60s, because in your 20s, you have quite a wide circle of single friends, and that gets smaller and smaller as your friends get married. Also, let's take care not to stereotype people. One single said to me, because in preparing for this sermon, I spoke to singles, I spoke to married people, I spoke to men, I spoke to women, I spoke to widowed, and one single person said to me, you know, singleness has never been an issue for me. And somebody else I knew has been sad and burdened their life because they wanted to get married. So let's not stereotype people. People are different. Hands up, all of you who are currently married. Who is currently married? That to me looks like about half, or even actually slightly less than half. So that already is one thing to be aware of, that just within our congregation, possibly over 50% of people are currently living a single life. A married friend said to me, she's in her 40s, and I was chatting about this sermon, and she said to me, she got married in her early 20s, has a family, and she said, do you know, I just can't imagine what it would be like not to have been married. I can't imagine what the single life would be like. And she said to me, do you know, I think our single friends should tell us. And so when I was preparing this sermon, I thought, okay, that is an approach that I will take. She has said, how can we know the issues for single people if they don't tell us? So I thought, all right, we'll just cover a few of those issues and look at it. Obviously, we can't cover everything. But one of our questions is, how singles-friendly are our churches? There was a survey done of singles in the churches. How singles-friendly are our churches? And this is a quote from the article as a result of the survey. The article was called, Are Evangelical Churches Bad for Singletons? And the article says, church, we have a problem. Because for a significant proportion of single Christians in the country, church isn't a welcoming place. But rather, it's a place where they feel isolated and ignored. For them, church is not inclusive and open-armed. but exclusive and a home for happy families. And according to the survey, the article says, while this may not be the intention in the churches, this is the perception among many single Christians. So that's interesting to think about. We have to think about our own church, how singles-friendly is our own church. But this is obviously an issue for many singles in the church, in the wider context. One issue for singles is, of course, all they have to do is the fact that they're on their own. And the things they have to do fitting into the church, they're fitting in on their own. Now, when I came down from London to live here about 13 years ago, I went to about 8 churches just to see what they were like and to see where I should settle, and I obviously prayed about it. And I have to say that going around to the different churches on my own was not an easy experience. Now, I'm very outgoing and I don't find it difficult to speak to people, and yet it was not easy. And I sometimes thought that perhaps for married folks, it could be an experience to just occasionally, on your own, go to a church where you know nobody and just sort of experience that, because it gives an insight into what some singles may feel when they come to this church. I think it's really good if we get insights into each other's lives. I mean, just in the same way, I think it could be quite good for some singles to experience looking after 3 young children for a weekend. I'm not offering, I have to say. But, you know, it's hard to put yourself in the shoes of others. And as a single, going to a new church, generally, you have to take the initiative. You have to kind of make the running. I have to say, Twynham was the friendliest church. And that was one reason why I stayed. I thought, wow, this is a church where they notice you when you come in. But let's think, because for those who are widowed or divorced, it's even more difficult because they've been used to doing things together. And suddenly they have to go into rooms on their own, they have to go into situations on their own. Now, my mum had many years of happy marriage, but when she was widowed, after a few years, she moved house, began to go to the new parish church, and their after-church coffee was in a room upstairs. It took her a year to go up there, and I was saying, oh, Mum, go up, you know, I'm sure they'll be friendly. But for her, she was so used to going with my dad, it was hard for her to go up into a room on her own. So let's look out for the singles, perhaps particularly those who are new in the church, and not only on their first visit, but their second and their third. If you see somebody studiously studying the notice boards on their own, it may well be a single who wants to stay, be part of things, talk to people, but doesn't quite know who to talk to. So they study the notice boards. Which, please don't stop studying notice boards. It's a very good thing to do. But just be on the lookout for folks. Also, this issue of singles is actually there are issues for leaders to consider. To be sensitive to the different groupings in the church when planning events. Now, I think that Twynham is very good on Mother's Day. Because usually the children come in and they give flowers or they give something they've made, and it's not just to the mums, it's to all the women, whether you're married or single, and that's lovely. You really feel included. So, you know, the leaders are good at thinking of things like that. I lived in Rome for a few years, and I used to go to an American international church there. And they celebrated Valentine's Day with a lovely big meal for all the couples. But they invited all the singles too, which was really nice. It was a lovely evening. And of course, the married couples were our friends. So things like that worth thinking about. Groups in the church. Now, if you're single, it's really nice to be with a group of singles. You have possibly some issues, you can support each other. If you're married with young kids, it's really nice to have a group in which you're sharing experiences, can help each other. And I know Julia Preston has just started up a group for recently widowed women. and they're a real support to each other. And I think there is room in a church for those peer groupings. And there's also room in a church for groups completely mixed, young, old, married, single, all together. One can be really blessed by a mixed group like that. So there is room for both in a church. And some people may prefer one kind of group to another. Another thing to consider is families. And as a family, how often are singles included in your family events? Again, speaking to somebody who'd been widowed, she said in her former church, after she'd been widowed, she so often, or always really, had to go home to Sunday lunch on her own. Because before, when she'd, her husband was there, she and all her married friends, just naturally they'd gone to their own homes to have a meal. And she said, it didn't actually occur to my married friends that actually my situation was different now. And I would have loved to have been invited out for a Sunday lunch with a family, with a married couple. I have to say that when I first came to this church, Russell and Molly, you really blessed me. You invited me to Sunday lunch, and often with sort of somebody else and, or two or three others. It was lovely. It really made me sort of begin to feel part of the church family. And it was a blessing to be with a family like that, Sunday lunch. What about contact with children? Now, people may be single with children. Or you may be single with children and grandchildren, and that's fantastic because you have that contact with the children. But for many singles, they may not have very much contact with children, particularly if they don't have nephews and nieces. And they can enjoy being part of a family. At the church when I lived in London, I went to a church in Haringey, very, very multicultural. And I would say probably 50% African from different countries. And the family is such an important concept to many African people. And all of us, married or single, we were all uncles and aunties to the children in the church. And it was lovely. I liked being an auntie to all the little children in the church. It was a really nice experience. And as a church, our children in the church are important. The children can be a real family for singles. So that's worth thinking about. They can be a real blessing. Church picnics. Now, I have to admit, I've not been to a Twynham church picnic. But on the church picnics, think about it. It would be really nice if perhaps families sometimes invited the singles to go with them in the car, to sit with them at the picnic. The singles can then actually feel part of the event, not just, well, I'm going to attend and I'm going to go to the picnic on my own in the car, but, oh, I'm going to go with a family and sit with a family. Just, you know, things like that are worth thinking about. And I must say, those couples and families who include me in their invitations, in their social events, are such a blessing to me. They really are. I love my friendships with couples, with families, those who include me, not thinking, oh, this is our single friend, but this is our friend. It's lovely, really is. And also, for us as singles, one advantage that we have is I think it's a bit easier to invite us to stay. When I'm invited, you know, sort of quite often to stay with my married friends and families, and I think it's a lot easier to put up one person in the spare room than to invite a family with four children, or even two children. So, you know, we don't take up quite so much room. So it's you know, that's one good thing about being single. But singles, it's not all one way. We need to consider how we can bless and support our married friends. It's not just, oh, what can we take from the families, but what can we give as well? Worth thinking about. And I think that's one of the questions I put for the house groups to think about. Another issue which was mentioned in the Evangelical Alliance article was outreach. Do you know how many households in England are single household, it is approximately 34%. Is this something we're aware of in our outreach activities? The article said, the researcher for the survey said, church leaders need to think strategically about how they attract single people to their churches. They need to go where single people go. Churches have few contact points with where single people go in general. They have more contact with families, youth groups, mums and toddlers groups, for example. So again, outreach. Outreach to singles, worth thinking about. And again, that's another question for the house groups. Other issues, you know, my friend said, tell us what it's like. Of course, there can be times of loneliness. But singles, we need to be aware loneliness is not confined to singleness. One person said to me, some of the loneliest people I've met have been people who married the wrong person. Esther Ranson was widowed and living alone for the first time at the age of 71. And she says in a recent article, very interesting article, I think it was in the Daily Telegraph and it's still online if you want to find it. She said, living alone for the first time at the age of 71, I was unprepared for the depression I felt, putting my key in the front door of my flat to find it dark and empty. Nobody to share a cup of tea with and laugh about my day. Nobody to sit companionably on the sofa with and discuss Dragon's Den with. My husband and I used to share every thought. It made her realise the isolation and loneliness of many people, and perhaps particularly older people. And she set up, I don't know if you've heard of it, she set up the Silver Line helpline. You remember she set up Childline, the helpline? She's now set up Silver Line helpline, so that lonely people can just ring up just to talk. Not necessarily with a problem, but just to talk. And in a survey in 2006 by Help the Aged said that then more than 1 million people over the age of 65 reported feeling lonely often or always. And Esther says, we know from our experience how lonely Christmas can be. I spoke to one of our callers on Christmas Day last year and asked him how his day had been. To be honest, Esther, he said, you're the first person I've spoken to all day. I had a look this morning at the Silver Line Helpline website, and they actually have put out a notice saying they are looking for volunteers to help on that helpline. Now, that might be something that somebody here, whether single or married, might feel they could do. Just be one of those callers, not the callers, one of the people to take the calls on helpline, just to have conversation with a person who's on their own and lonely. But, as I said, let's not stereotype people. Not all singles are lonely, or even lonely for most of the time. One wrote to me, and he said, regarding living alone, I can't remember the last time I felt lonely. So, again, not everyone is the same. But as a church, and as individuals in the church, let's be aware that there are needs, perhaps, for some people for companionship, a friendly call, an inclusion in an invitation. As well as considering, okay, how singles-friendly are churches, the singles may have problems of self-worth. Now, when you're in your 20s and you go to a wedding, very often you have people say to you, your turn next, or have you got a special someone? And your parents, of course, they never say, well, if you get married. They always say, well, when you get married. And I think for most singles, the expectation, they're probably expected most of their lives, that they are going to get married. Right from the age of, you know, sort of about seven, little girls, they think of, these are going to be all my children, and they prepare all their names for all their children that they're going to have when they're married. And their assumption is they're going to get married. So, some singles have a sense of failure. They think, well, everybody expected me to get married. I expected to get married. Oh, I failed. What's wrong with me? I haven't managed it. And marriage generally is often seen as the arrival point. Think of Cinderella. You know, the whole story of Cinderella right up to the climax. She got married and lived happily ever after. And a lot of the chick flicks, you know, on television, they're the same thing. Kind of, you know, the marriage or now the living partnership is the climax. So, people in their 20s, gradually as their friends get married, they can feel, oh, I've still got stuck at stage one. I've still got stuck with singleness. And phrases such as, my other half, some people can begin to feel, oh, am I only half a person? I'm not a complete person. I haven't got married. A sense of, you know, I'm not the whole. There may be unhelpful views of singles. You know, oh, she's a bit odd. He's a bit odd. Did he choose not to get married? Assumptions a person's gay. I think that men probably have to put up with that assumption more than women. But I have a friend who's a missionary in her 40s, lovely lady, and she would have liked to have got married. She goes back to the States on furlough, and she said to me last year, she said, quite a lot of people assume I'm gay. And she said, I have even been propositioned, and this is in Christian circles. I mean, I was really shocked, but that is a consideration that some people who are single actually have to put up with this assumption about them. And that's very hurtful, particularly, you know, if a person has wanted to get married and people are thinking, why haven't they got married? So, turning to the Bible, what does the Bible say about singleness? Well, not much. Which is why this sermon was a bit more difficult, because I like to have a real passage to expound. And I thought, oh, gosh, I can't really find a passage. But I think one of the most helpful things is to look at Jesus. Now, when I was choosing clip art, I didn't have pictures. I thought, I don't want to choose clip art or a statue of Jesus, because I want to really focus on the fact that Jesus was a real person, a real living man. Was he half a person? Do we feel he was an unfulfilled, incomplete person? I don't think we do. And yet, Jesus was single, but we feel he was the most complete, fulfilled man the world has ever known. A person with a complete sense of his own self-worth. So, what does it mean to live a fulfilled life as a Christian? Well, it shouldn't depend on whether we are married or not married. I think that to live a fulfilled life as a Christian should depend on loving God with all our hearts, souls, minds, and strength, and loving our neighbour as ourselves. In whatever state we are, married or single, that should be our goal. That brings the truly fulfilled life and the complete person, whether we're married or whether we are single. And I think married people would say that they can't look to their married partner to bring them sort of total, utter, complete, 100% fulfillment in every area of their lives. Our fulfillment as Christians must be primarily related Godwards. So singles, take care not to look on marriage as being the only thing which will bring you fulfillment and self-worth. Married, take care not to look on singles as being incomplete people. Let's consider not only Jesus, but the Apostle Paul, who of course was single. And Paul wrote about remaining unmarried, speaking about unmarried people in, oh, here we are, there's a verse at last, 1 Corinthians 7, and there's a section there. And he said about married people, he said, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Because of the present crisis, and those are important words. Because of the present crisis, I think it is good for you to remain as you are. Verse 28, those who marry will face many troubles in this life, and I want to spare you this. The time is short. Verse 32, I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But a married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. And then he goes on to say something similar about unmarried women. But his context was, at that time, they thought, the Christians thought, they were just on the edge of the end times. They thought there was going to be this massive crisis in the world, culminating in Jesus returning. And they thought that was imminent. And so what Paul is saying is to the people around him was, leave yourself free. Leave yourself free from care. Focus on God. Focus on Jesus in this time of crisis. But in Paul's other teaching, you can see he wasn't against marriage. He thought it was obviously a very good thing. And Steve Crockford last week, in his sermon on marriage, commented on marriage as, I think it was Rowan Williams' comment, marriage is the bedrock of society. And you get that message from the Bible very clearly. Jesus only had a little bit of teaching about singleness, and it was in the context of when he'd just been speaking about divorce. And somebody asked him a question, and he replied, and then the disciples said to him, oh, gosh, well, it would be better not to marry at all. And Jesus' reply to that was, he said, well, only some people can accept that. And he gave three reasons why people didn't marry. The third reason he gave, he said, some have renounced marriage because of the kingdom of heaven. Some have renounced marriage because of the kingdom of heaven. And he said, the one who can accept this should accept this. That is Matthew 19. And some people down the ages have made a decision, such a hard choice, for celibacy. Think of the monks, the nuns, the priests, right up to the present time. And the missionaries. There are many missionaries who will go to a particular location where it is very unlikely that they will meet a marriage partner. And that is a choice for the kingdom of God. In secular Western society, it is becoming more and more and more the culture that people live with their partners, not married. And not uncommonly, people may have two or three, perhaps long-term relationships, and it may be that at the end they do get married. But for the Christian, sleeping with a partner outside marriage is not an option. It is not an option for the Christian. So the single Christian who makes that choice not to sleep with somebody outside marriage is following Jesus' example of remaining single for the sake of the kingdom of God. Now, that may only be for a short time, or maybe for a longer period, it may be for a lifetime. But it's a definite decision in favour of holiness and the kingdom of heaven. Let's look at some practical issues of the single life. Again, my friend said, singles, tell us what it's like, otherwise we don't know. Here are some practical issues that singles deal with. Holidays. Now, the upside, the good thing about being single is you may well be freer. You may not. You may have dependent parents, you may have dependent children, but you may be freer to just take your holiday when you want to and to up and go, which is great. And I have had some fantastic holidays. The downside is, who do you go with? And that can be really hard. It's easier when you're in your 20s and you have lots of single friends. But as time moves on, you know, your choices of who do you go on holiday with are more limited. Some people like to go on holiday on their own, and that's great. Some people don't. And holidays can be more expensive. A single room is so much more expensive than a double room. Can be especially difficult for the divorced or widowed. They've been used to have somebody to go on holiday with, used to have somebody to go away for the weekend with, to go to events with, go to the cinema with, or whatever. And suddenly there is no longer that partner to share things with, to enjoy things with. Christmas time. Some singles who don't have family near them may wonder who they will spend Christmas with. again, in my old church, there was a family who every year invited an older man in the church. He was a really nice guy. He was a road sweeper, you know, fairly sort of rough about the edges, but they invited him every year just to be part of their family Christmas. And it was a real blessing both ways, I think. So just think, married, is there a single that it would be good to invite for Christmas? I'm going to my family, by the way, but, you know, but thank you anyways. Expenses. Running a home can be more expensive if there's only the one income for a single person than for married. You still need the same amount of heating. You can't really buy all those wonderful offers in the supermarket, great big family packs, because you can't get through them, and your freezer may be quite little. You can't take advantage of the two-for-one offers at restaurants. All these things, you know, it can be a bit more expensive. On the other hand, I recently filled a box, a Christmas shoe box, and I don't normally need to buy presents for children, and I was shocked. I thought, it is so expensive. I thought, how does anybody cope financially who has children? Children are expensive, aren't they? I just can't believe it. So I have to say that as a single, we do have the money that we're not spending on our children, which can be an advantage. What about DIY? Now, those of us who have been single all our lives, we have learnt most of the household skills. We've learnt the cooking, we've learnt the cleaning, we've learnt the drilling holes in walls to put in wall plugs, the unblocking the sink, the researching the mortgages, the getting stains out of carpets, the how to make a shepherd's pie, how to paint, how to decorate. And I have to say that personally, although it's a bit hard work, there is a satisfaction in learning skills and being able to cope. On the other hand, one is always making mistakes. I had a conservatory. I didn't build this conservatory, but I had a conservatory. And to save money, I was going to do all the painting, which I did. But although I've done quite a lot of painting and decorating and stuff about the house, I had never painted on new plaster. And I didn't know that the first layer of paint on new plaster has to be thinned out. So I painted the whole conservatory. And then I found it out. So I got some sandpaper, and it's a big conservatory. I rubbed down the whole conservatory, and the whole thing was filled with all this paint dust. I've probably got some terrible lung disease now, I don't know. And rubbed the whole lot down, because I didn't know you had to thin paint out on plaster. But still, one learns. Obviously, married people will do all the chores as well, and lots of married women do a lot of sort of the what might be considered the men's sort of things around the house, the carpentry, the whatever, the painting. But for singles, I think the difficulty is you have to do the lot. You have to do the lot. There's no one to share the chores with. And I have to say, sometimes I can see Sue laughing. Sometimes I come home and I think, oh, it would be so nice to come home and find that there was a meal made for me. Or think, oh, it would be so nice if there was somebody else who had mended that broken blade on the hovermow. Or, oh, somebody else who'd done the ironing. Or, oh, just somebody else who'd cleaned out the gutters. You know, it's just the whole lot. But, you know, but also, I think, again, more difficult for the divorced or the widowed. Because there may well have been a division of tasks in their marriage. And there may well be tasks they have never had to do. And suddenly, in a time of bereavement and sadness, they are also faced with a load of tasks they haven't done before. And even may not have even been able to drive, which doesn't help. It's actually, and one of the things to recognise is for singles, there is a tricky line here. Because we don't want to ask for too much help. We don't want to show ourselves as or be overly dependent. But on the other side, we may not ask for help when we need it because we don't want to be a nuisance. So there is that difficulty. Singles, take care. Don't become overly dependent. Learn new skills. We do just have to get on with it. But marrieds, be aware that singles may need practical help at some times, and it's hard when the single always has to be the one who goes out and asks. So just be aware that there may be help that's needed sometime. And perhaps as a church family, we need to be more aware of each other's needs for support like that. And some jobs just need two people. Two or three years ago, I was had some IKEA wardrobes, and I bought two great big double wardrobes to put everything in. And I screwed them all together, which actually I quite like doing, and it's all done. So here we are with a great big IKEA wardrobe on the floor. And I have to admit, the instructions did say two people to raise it. But I thought, well, there aren't two people. You know, I can't lift it up. You know, it's on its side. I can't lift it up with two people because there aren't two people here. And unfortunately, I treated it like you would an ordinary wooden wardrobe. I thought, that's all right. We lift it a bit up, lever it up, and it'll go. And here is Graham laughing. Because it got to the point. And you know these naff IKEA wardrobes. The whole thing collapsed like a pack of cards. I actually thought it was going to go through my bedroom floor. And there I was with, you know, everything sort of having screwed it for the last hour and a half, and the whole lot had collapsed and ripped the sort of things out. No. And I have to say, at that point, I rang Rick Reed, because I thought, I need another person. And bless him, Rick Reed came along. And I want to, I don't think, Rick and Francis, I don't think are here, but I want to honour Rick and Francis. Rick is amazing. He will come round and help. And I think Rick and Francis are sacrificial. Rick's a handyman, but they do not charge high fees because they look on it to a certain extent as their ministry within the church. And it is one. And he is a blessing to all of those who need two people to do things, or things that we just don't have the strength to do, or sometimes the equipment. I don't have a really good electric screwdriver, so I can't sometimes do stuff you need a really good electric screwdriver for. Things you need two people for. Holding ladders. Now, I can prune my wisteria, but I have to get pretty high up, and I need someone to hold the ladder. And I think, I can't ask my elderly neighbours. And I was chatting with this about this with Pauline Marsh, and she said, oh, I'll come, let me know. So now I feel bad about it, getting somebody all the way from Watford to Southbourne just to hold a ladder. But Pauline, I'll be calling on you. Singles, if you do have a little bit of spare money, don't feel guilty about paying to get help. Like, you know, I was able to ask Rick to do some stuff. Every 3 weeks, I have somebody coming for 2 hours to help clean my house. It is a sheer joy to open the door and smell that chiff and think, oh, my bathroom's clean, my floors have been cleaned. Now, it's only 2 hours every 3 weeks, but I don't feel guilty because I think, you know, I work, I am on my own doing things, and just to have that help is great. So, kind of conclusions. Many singles do have a freedom of choice that married people don't have, just from their condition. If you're not a single parent or not looking after an elderly parent, you can be very free in your choices of what to do. And I have to say, I've never been married, but I have had a really interesting life with lots of fun in it. I lived for 3 years in Poland just after the fall of communism. I lived for 3 years in Rome, the most beautiful city in the world. I ran training course in Kazakhstan, went to visit friends in Kyrgyzstan, flew over the mountains of Kyrgyzstan. Amazing experiences. I spent time learning two different musical instruments, going to photography course, an astronomy course, learning languages. I've really done a lot of things that I have enjoyed. And I've had more free time to do that. I have the freedom, when I get home in the evening, to cook or not to cook. I mean, generally, I cook because I want to eat, but, you know, but I don't have to create a big meal. To eat when I want, what I want, To watch TV if I want to and not fight for the remote. To nip off for a weekend and visit a friend. To actually do what I feel like doing. And that's not selfishness, because there isn't somebody for me to have to consider. I would say singles, we must make sure we live life to the full. We have only got one life. And whichever state we are, as a single, widowed, divorced, never married, hoping to be married, don't let's waste the life we have now. Now, this may be easy, or it may take hard work, but it's worth it. Our life is a gift from God. What a blessing every day is. And as a church family, let's understand each other's needs. Singles, be there for the marrieds. Marrieds, be there for the singles. British culture, we tend to be very self-contained in our little family units. But as church, our family unit is the church. Let's look beyond also our own little family units and make our brothers and sisters in the church truly brothers and sisters who we look out for, we love, we understand, we care for, we have fun with, irrespective of whether married or single. And in terms of self-worth, let's all of us remember, single and married, we are individually made in the image of God. And before us, we have as a model and an example, Jesus Christ, the model of the true, fulfilled, complete person. Let's find our self-worth, our identity, whoever we are, in being valued in God's sight. And let's find our true fulfillment in loving and serving God with all our hearts.